Good afternoon and welcome to Art Speaker Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm your host, Maria Vasquez Boyd. Every Wednesday from noon to 1, we present Art Speaker Radio. So we focus on the literary, the artistic, the visual arts, the performing arts, right here on this little old radio station every Wednesday from noon to 1. And today we have some really wonderful guests in the studio today. We've got Danny Powell, who's the president of the Kansas City Blues Society. He's going to talk to us about the Art of Blues and Jazz event. We also have in the studio Teresa Lagarde, Keon Jackson, and Aisha M. Obey, and they're going to talk about Gumbo House, which was written by Keon Jackson, directed by Teresa, and it's very exciting and brand new play, and so we're going to hear from them. Also, in the last half, I have Charity Thaxton and Julia Six. They're going to talk about their program, I don't know exactly what to call it. I suppose a happening. It's called Catch a Tiger by the Toe, and it's going to be an interactive exhibition that will be presented at Front Space at 217 West 18th Street here in Kansas City, Missouri, this Friday and First Friday. Lots of things happening for First Friday, and we love that about our city. So let's get started up with our wonderful friend and community activist, I would say, because he's all about music. Yes. Danny Powell, who's the president of Kansas City Blues Society. He's talking about Art of Blues and Jazz event that takes place Friday, March 4th, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Buttonwood Art Space at 3013 Main Street here in Kansas City, Missouri. And all the proceeds will benefit the Kansas City Blues Society and KC Jazz Alive. Welcome, Danny.
Thank you, Maria, for having me here today.
You're an awesome presence with KKFI. We love whenever you're around. So we were talking in the green room a bit about the event, the Art of Blues and Jazz event. So tell us a little bit more. Give us some meat on the bones.
Okay. This idea kind of started about a year and a half ago. Kansas City is known for not only its art community, but its music history and the music community.
Very rich.
And one of the top places in the world now for that. It's kind of a situation where they talk about Kansas City being full of art and music, and the idea came about to create a situation where not only to express the history between the blues and jazz of Kansas City, but the fact that music is a big part of the art community of Kansas City. So I met with gentleman who owns a Budwood Gallery, John McGraw, who's also president of Jazz Alive, and over some beverages one evening, and we got to talking about the art community and the music community, and I expressed to him about the fact that music is art, and we got evolving into that, and it just kind of came together. Let's put together this event. And John's group, Buttonwood Financials, where the Buttonwood Art Gallery is, they on First Fridays, they do a gallery, and it's strictly for nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put out a call, they did, to over 300 artists.
Wow.
To submit four pieces of art that were selected, from a juried group out of Wichita and Phoenix, mm-hmm. and it had to depict music and the Kansas City music history and the Kansas City music scene.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, there's 100 pieces that are going to
wow.
be on display March 4th.
And then you were telling me there's a piece out of...
Yes, there was a piece sent over from Thailand.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's a lot of paintings and wall art and sculptures and that type of thing that
is
submitted. Yes.
Beautiful. You know, it really does go hand in hand. So let's talk about the music itself, the performance for that evening.
Yes, we have two performances. At the VIP event starts at 5 o'clock and goes till 6 p.m., and then the gallery is open till to the public. And at 5:30, a local artist by the name of Carla Bauer mm-hmm. will be performing from 5:30 to 6:30. And Carla's just released a CD here this past week that is a tribute to Miss Nina Simone. So
wow.
That's going to be very good.
How exciting, yeah.
And then at 7 p.m. we have a local blues duo, Carla Petrie and Jim Herbert, and they will be performing from 7 to 8, and they were the representatives this past January for the Kansas City to the International Blues Challenge mm-hmm. in Memphis, mm-hmm. and we're semifinalists in that event down there. So it's going to be a great event. We're very excited about it. The proceeds are split 50% with the artists, and then Jazz Alive and Kansas City Blues Society will split the 50%.
Because, as you know, with the Kansas City Blues Society, I know that you do a lot of outreach in the community with young folks, right?
Yes, we do. We have what we call a Blues in the Schools program that we actually pay our local professional musicians to go out into the schools. Recently, we've expanded that into the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library system, mm-hmm. and they will do one-hour events that they give kind of a history lesson of the blues music and the Kansas City style of music, mm-hmm. and then they play and perform, and it's very interactive to the young people. So they get them involved in it.
When you talk about the Kansas City style, are students aware that there is sort of a Kansas City style to the blues, or
no,
is it just
actually there's a
something...
lot of there's a lot of adults that don't realize
yeah.
there's a Kansas City style.
Yeah. Tell us what the Kansas
well,
City style
the Kansas
is.
City style is the saying goes that jazz was born in New Orleans and it grew up in Kansas City, and the Kansas City influence is. When those players came to Kansas City, they would get together over at the Mutual Musicians Foundation, and a lot of the blues players, you know, that predate Kansas City jazz were still around, and they would all get together and they would play. So you had a mixture of New Orleans jazz, big band sound, and the local blues gospel. Performers, and out of that came what they called jump blues, which is actually the birth of the modern jazz.
Beautiful.
So.
You know, and we're so fortunate to have you to help educate the community and the youth in Kansas City about the history, you know.
Yes,
so
yes,
it's so important.
Yes, it is. And, you know, Kansas City Blues Society, we're the second oldest blues society in the United States. We've been
wow.
around for 35 years. And that's one of our goals is to keep this American art form, and especially in Kansas City, keep it alive and educate the next generation.
You know, we have such a reputation for Kansas City blues and jazz and that.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't want to disappoint anybody, would we?
No, we don't. And it's interesting because I a lot of musicians that are in that I'm associated with within the blues community, they'll travel to Europe and all over the place. And when they come back, we always have conversations and always ask them how things were and how they were received. And without a doubt, they all tell me that whenever they go to any place in Europe or any and the crowds find out they're from Kansas City, they just get mobbed and they want to know about
wow.
Kansas City and the history of Kansas City. And so we want to make sure that the next generation here, you know, has that enthusiasm and continues that tradition of the great blues and jazz of Kansas City.
Absolutely. Really, really, really important. I'm talking to Danny Powell, the president of the Kansas City Blues Society, and he wants to tell us about the arts a blues and jazz event that's happening this Friday, March 4th, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Now, the 5 o'clock is the VIP, right, Danny?
Yes, it's a VIP event.
Right.
We have, it's catered, a couple of local caterers, Chris Miller Foods and Taste of KC are going to cater the whole event all night, mm-hmm. and it's free to the public, so, you know, but the VIP is for some of our local benefactors that have helped put this together for us.
And we can say that because you're not for profit, right?
That's okay. Not for profit.
That was enough.
We're
to
not
see.
For profit. Yes.
Okay. And again, the event is at Buttonwood Art Space at 3013 Main Street, just down the block from us here.
Yes.
At KKFI, and the proceeds benefit the Kansas City Blues Society and KC Jazz Alive. Who are some of the musicians that you work with through the Blues Society? I know Jason Bavone's one.
Yeah,
right?
Jason Bavone. Yeah. Jason's a good friend. As a matter of fact, Jason.
We love him.
Jason does a lot of our Blues and Schools programs.
Yeah. I bet he's really popular because I know that he plays the cigar box guitars, and I think that's a great way to sort of segue into an interest in music and blues.
Well, and Jason's such a musicologist of blues,
he's
able to speak to those young people and explain that music to them and get them to understand the difference of the blues music and how it is kind of the roots of a lot of music in our world today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we Samantha Fish and the Schneblin brothers and sisters, we're all, you know, they're a big part of our community.
Wow, that's terrific. You know, I want to share with our listeners that Danny was very gracious in bringing tickets to the station for our listeners if you're lucky enough, I'll take the third caller, not right now, but when I go to a break, I'll take the third caller to win a pair of tickets for the Art of Blues and Jazz KC Style March 4th this Friday. And you would call the number 816-931-5534. That would be the third caller. But don't call me right now because I'm on the air with Danny Powell. Danny Powell. Well, you know, it's terrific what came out of this conversation with your friend. And, sometimes we don't always connect music and the visual arts or sculpture with, you know, as one, but
yes.
it makes a terrific sense, and it's good for the community.
Yes, it is, so. And we want to do more of this to where we connect the arts and become a very whole art community.
Absolutely.
And we've got some fabulous artists, and we've got some fabulous musicians in this town, and I'm very proud to represent part of that, yeah.
Very good. Any last words, Dan?
Just please come out. There's some fabulous art pieces,
yeah.
And it's going to be a fun time. It's a great event, and we have been hearing that we're looking at maybe 300 or 400 people showing up.
Terrific.
For the event. So,
you know, and I do want to mention that the website is buttonwoodartspace.com. So for more information, that will tell you everything you need to know.
And if you go to that website, you can see some of the pieces that are going to be exhibited. So,
terrific.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Danny.
Thank you.
You're welcome back anytime.
Okay.
Keep up the good work in the community.
All right. Thank you.
We'll be right back with Art Speak Radio after this. I'll take the third caller for a pair of VIP tickets to the Art of Blues and Jazz event. And you're listening to KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Art Speak Radio that you've tuned into. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, your host and the producer for this afternoon. Thank you for making us a priority. You know, I want to say that before the break, we had a caller that won a pair of tickets to the VIP event, the Art of Blues and Jazz event. Thank you, Tom, for listening and for calling in today. And, you know, I think I could give away another pair, but not right now. I'll let you know, because right now in the house, we have Keon Jackson and Teresa Lagarde, who Well, Keon Jackson wrote Gumbo House, and Teresa Lagarde directed Gumbo House, the play. And we're going to find out all about Gumbo House. And I want to welcome Keon Jackson and Teresa Lagarde.
Thank you so much for
Thank
having
you.
Me.
Thank you. You bet. You know, I didn't give a little bit of synopsis about the play because I want it to come from your words because it's your baby, Keon.
Yes, yes, it's my baby.
So
I'm very excited to share it. Essentially, at the core, Gumbo House is a love story. So it's about this couple who's madly in love. They live in New Orleans. Hurricane Katrina hits, and then they're separated. So, the woman is forced to relocate to Baton Rouge, and so now she and her lover are separated, and the big question of the play is, will they be reunited? So in the process of the story unfolding, we're meeting new family members, and of course anytime you get a bunch of people under one roof, personalities come out, family stuff starts coming up, and humans being humans. So it's really a fun ride. It's a humorous ride. It's also heart-wrenching and very poignant in some, I think, very resonant ways. So I'm very, very excited to share it.
And in some ways, you know, when we were talking in the green room, it's very close to you. I mean, as you know, sort of revealing your family.
Well, in some ways, yes. Yeah. So I'm originally from Louisiana. I'm from Port Allen, Louisiana, mm-hmm. which is 45 minutes away from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So as I'm writing the piece, I've been away from home for about 12 years now. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about the cadences in the way people from back home speak and the foods that we eat and the music that we listen to. So in some ways, the characters are very, very close to me and they feel like my family. Mm-hmm. So on opening night, mm-hmm. I'm just like, what's up, Kansas City? Meet my aunt. What's up? Like, this is my cousin. Like, that's my boy from up the street.
Yeah.
And so there's something very personal about the play. And I'm just excited to share these characters, my family, to some degree with Kansas City.
Now, is this the first play that you've written? Or
this is the longest play I've written. Uh-huh. So uh-huh. I wrote two pieces for the Kansas City 1-Minute Play Festival, which were very, very short. And I wrote a 10-minute play in college, but this is the longest piece I've written. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I mess around in different mediums, like short film and mm-hmm. children's books and different things like that. But this is my longest play.
And this was directed by Teresa Lagarde, who's here. Mm-hmm. And Teresa, your name always comes up with writing and directing and all. So tell us about your role in directing this play. What was it like?
Well, Keon and I are very good friends, so when I had the opportunity to work with a good friend, I jumped at that, first of all. And then in reading earlier drafts and meeting his characters, you've mentioned this story to me. Keon has mentioned this story to me off and on for years, mm-hmm. right? Some of these characters have lived with him in his head for a very long time. So around the 10th anniversary mm-hmm. of the storm, the story began to revisit him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when he really sort of got hot on it and came to me and was like, I'm going to finish this. I want it on stage. And he invited me to direct. And I'm still very new as a director. My first full one-act experience was directing last summer in the Fringe Festival. So when he invited me to do it, I sort of jumped at the chance and was really eager to see what this story would look like in three dimensions.
Well, I love that. I've got the synopsis in front of me that, you know, it's about faith and redemption and security and those human, you know, emotions and qualities that we all feel. So whether you have a knowledge of Hurricane Katrina or New Orleans, it still has that element of humanness to it, right?
Yes, it's very much about family. And even when I think most people think about Hurricane Katrina, our minds automatically go to the footage, which was very, very hard to look at. And the thing that stands out is how elemental those needs were, like the need to be fed, to be clothed, to feel secure, to feel like you matter, to feel like you're worth saving. These are things that we all deal with. It's just that a lot of things came to the surface during that tragedy. So I think that even though it's been 10 years since the storm, these are evergreen parts of the human condition that will resonate with anybody.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the cast. Who's in Gumbo House?
Wow, we have got dynamic.
Should I share this with
a
you?
Dynamic group. We've got Nedra Dixon, who is like... amazing.
She's like a force.
She's so great
and so gracious.
Most recently, I've seen her in Black Pearl Sings, which was just off Broadway.
That was
Granville O'Neill, who we also saw at Just Off Broadway in a production, and those two are just a delight to watch in rehearsal. They're a lot of fun. We also have Aisha Ogbe, who's a student at UMKC, a theater student. Earl McWilliams, who has done more film and commercial work, who's really excited to kind of get to stretch his legs on stage, so we're excited to give him that opportunity. And Stephen Jackson, who is kind of our newest actor of the crew, and so it's really wonderful to watch all of these actors with different levels of experience, a different amount of time in the theater game to sort of share with each other and grow together and learn from each other. So that's been really fun to watch.
Beautiful. If you've just tuned in, I'm talking to Teresa Lagarde and Keon Jackson about Gumbo House, a new play that opens March 11th and it runs through March 13th. That's going to be performed at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater at 3614 Main Street. Again, just right down the street from us. And so working together was a lot of fun because you have that sort of relationship. You have sort of, you know, your strengths and weaknesses as friends, right?
Yes.
I don't even know if I've ever said this to you, Teresa, but I never thought about anybody else directing. Teresa and I have been friends for maybe about 7 or 8 years, and I have many favorite things about her. One of them is just, like, so much swag, just, like, one of the coolest people. her life is like a black and white photo and, like, jazz music. She's so cool. But she also has this...
I didn't tell him to say
it. She did not, but it's in my heart, so I'm going to say
it. It's on my script.
But she's so smart and incredibly sensitive and incredibly respectful. So she's a beautiful writer. So I knew that if I handed my piece over to her, she would not just start cutting out monologues to save time unless she was very thoughtful about it. So the same qualities that make her a good friend and a good person, they make her a good director. So it's a joy for me just to sit back and, like, watch her bloom and do her thing. She's a star to me.
She's really nurturing your words?
Absolutely. And she respects the characters.
Yeah.
She respects the experience. And she's open. She's open to take suggestions and to learn along the journey, which is a level of humility that can sometimes be rare in the arts. So it's just a privilege to watch.
Listen to this guy, right? Like, he made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
Clearly.
But it has been wonderful for us to actually get to work together in this capacity. And Keon is a walking party. Everybody who meets him loves him, and so I'm just happy to be a part of this project and to see him shine and to see, and theater has been something that kind of bit me a couple of years ago, so to be able to kind of see him get the itch to scratch and put something on stage is very exciting to see as well.
Well, it sounds like because you have the admiration and respect and the willingness to work together, future plays down the road?
Perhaps? Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because this one sounds just really wonderful. Let's talk a bit about the play too.
Well, from my perspective, like Keon was saying, when the actual storm hit, what we have is a lot of facts and figures, right?
Yeah.
Any of us could go online and research the storm now and get news footage and get interviews and everything like that, which paints it in a really broad stroke about what happened. But everybody who was involved in that, either there in Louisiana or remotely, as Keon was, because you were actually away at school,
I was away at school, like calling back
when it happened. But there are individual stories that live within those facts and figures. And so for me, even though I'm not from Louisiana, I was also away at school, for example, when 9/11 happened, and I am from the East Coast. So the kind of checking in and the relentless watching of the news that Keon was probably doing for Hurricane Katrina, I was doing for that. And so trying to remember those individual stories and the story that we are telling of individual people who are part of those huge numbers that were affected, that's part of their personal history now. We have the collective history as a nation of what happened with Hurricane Katrina, but these are they are individual stories, countless individual mm-hmm. stories that now belong to family histories mm-hmm. and personal histories. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to shed a light on those as well.
And I wanted to mention to our listeners that a portion of the proceeds will be donated to the long-term recovery of the Lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans. Right?
Yes, ma'am. Can I say where?
Or, you,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. We're going to donate to a charity called Lower9.org, which mm-hmm. Is dedicated to the long-term recovery of the Lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that it stood out was because I think that around the anniversary, of course, everybody's thinking about it. But eventually the news cameras go away.
Yeah,
there's a lot competing for our attention right now. I mean, mm-hmm. people are tweeting. I mean, yeah. There's so much going on.
Sure.
So the fact that they are dedicated to being in the region to see it through complete recovery is something that we want to support.
Beautiful. And again, the play is Gumbo House. It's a new play running March 11th through March 13th. And I'm talking with Keon Jackson and the director, Teresa Lagarde. The play takes place during the eve or on the eve of Hurricane Katrina. So beautiful, very beautiful. Any last words that you all want to share with our listeners? Oh, they look at each other like, what? What?
Well, I'm just filled with gratitude, so I just want to take the opportunity to say thank you to Keon for inviting me onto this project, and thank you to our cast and our amazing mm-hmm. stage manager who's working tirelessly with me as a new director. Mm-hmm. Thank you to Just Off Broadway Theater, who's helping us with rehearsal space, and thank you to the Met for finding room to give us the stage so that we can tell this story in a very fine theater space.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, so for showtimes, ticket prices, all of the information that you need, gumbohouseplay.eventbrite.com is the website, and you can find out more information about that. And it's performed at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, 3614 Main Street, just, again, over there. And Gumbo House, a new play by Keon Jackson and directed by Teresa Lagarde. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us and sharing your stories. And we look forward to your opening night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great.
Very good. We're going to take a break right now. So I tell you what, I'll take the second caller who will give me a buzz here at 816-931-5534. I've got another pair of VIP tickets for Art of Blues and Jazz, Casey Style. We'll be right back after this. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd. Thank you for tuning in to ArtSpeak Radio. We're here every Wednesday from noon to 1. And thank you so much for tuning in. Listen, I want to say congratulations to John, who called in and won a pair of tickets to the VIP Arts and Jazz event that's happening this Friday. Lots going on this Friday. I want to welcome in the studio now Kendall Harbin and Charity Thaxton, Julia Six. They're going to talk about the art event and exhibition of A Tisket a Tasket. So, welcome you all.
Hi, Maria.
Hi.
And, I want to say that Charity Thaxton hails from New England. She received her BFA from Keene State College in New Hampshire. And she's an artist member of the Philadelphia-based gallery practice. And I love this part. She loves Bruce Springsteen, because he's like a boss. She also has a penchant for sharing Dove chocolate because it's dark and sweet, just like her. And then we have Texas-born and raised Julia Six, who received her BFA from Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. Now, there's something in here, too. Let's see. Six juggles between being an adjunct professor at the University of the Arts mm-hmm. and a full-time nanny, all of which keeps her on her toes, not wearing cowboy boots, for the record. I didn't see that for myself. Kendall, did you...
Oh, no, I'm just adjusting the microphone.
Okay, very good. So let's hear about A Tisket a Tasket. Who wants to start?
A Tisket a Tasket is a project that Six and I have collaborated on. We've actually been working on it for the past 5 months.
I think we wrote a proposal in the summer and sent it to Front Space Gallery. And, we've been working on it ever since then.
And we're going to ask... Kendall, about Front Space, so we'll kind of back up a little bit, we'll backtrack, and talk to us about Front Space.
Front Space is a project space on 18th Street. It is located pretty much catty corner to YJ's Cafe, I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with. And it's a small storefront space that's been repurposed into a gallery, art, music venue, pretty much a space for creativity in all capacities. And we are, as an organization, really interested in supporting radical and interdisciplinary practices. And so when Julia and Charity approached us with their project idea, it seemed like a really perfect fit for the space.
Terrific. So what will take place at that space? Because it's sort of interactive, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it is interactive. So we've curated a playlist for the viewer to listen to that'll be playing throughout the gallery, and those songs will lead the viewer to a certain object that we have created. So it's part scavenger hunt, part art show, and the viewer is welcome to take their object that they think has most value that we've created.
So it is very interactive. The audience is going to participate in the work by placing value and meaning on the object they select, which is really really going to be fun for the audience and terrific way to really get people bring people together and have them participate in an art in a way that maybe they haven't before. So there's also musical sets of clues. Is this local music, or is what kind of music are we going to be listening for?
The music is started from, excuse me, it's all popular music. Initially, the plan was that it would be accessed through a Spotify playlist, but just because of logistics, we found it easier to just create like a traditional playlist. And
well, and I'm also reading that there's going to be ceramic and non-ceramic objects, so ceramic pieces by either
both.
One of you? By
both of us.
Yeah. Okay. And that's going to be Front Space at 217 West 18th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. The opening reception is this Friday, first Friday, March 4th, from 6 to 9. And then you'll also do NCICA reception, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. NCICA is the National Council for Ceramic Arts Conference. It's a conference that's held every year. And this year it happens to be taking place in Kansas City, which is part of the reason why we approached Front Space.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be exciting.
And that's happening, I believe it's the third week of March.
Yes, yeah, so the 16th March through the 17th, I think.
March 17th from 6 to 9, that's on a Thursday, that reception. So, you know, with Front Space, you have a lot of different artists that you show for in the gallery, right? And then sometimes it doesn't always take place at Front Space at 217 West 18th Street, right?
Yeah, definitely. Front Space, as being a very like small but powerful matchbox sized sort of room, sometimes gets utilized by artists as like a portal to other spaces. In the past, we've actually had people offer time-traveling workshops in the space, and so they're really upending the idea of what this can be as a gallery. Because in art terms, it's really not a practical gallery. There's not a lot of, like, white walls. There's not a room to, you know, hang things in the traditional sense. And so we see artists all the time use this as, like, a site for participation and developing a new relationship with their audience, which I think is something that a lot of artists are interested in doing at some point in their practice, if not all the time.
Well, and I know that most recently, one of the most successful gatherings of artists that took place was right over here off Main Street at the old Katz building.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the Katz Drugstore Studio is a space that was really generous enough to let us host our first annual live drawing fundraiser. And this involved bringing in 22 local artists to create works on paper on the spot that were all sold at a flat rate of $30, which, as I'm sure you can imagine with that equation, we had a lot of people in the room. And it was really
really invigorating to see so many people coming together just to support local artists. And that's really like what Front Space is about. You know, we want to see our local community sustaining itself through friendship-based projects. But at the same time, we're really interested in bringing out-of-town artists to come and work with us so that we can see creativity through the eyes of some other city. So, like, when we have people like you two come from Philadelphia, we get this whole other, like, flavor in the mix.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about Etisket Etasket. Do you have any sort of expectations in your mind how you see this operating for the evening? I mean, you know, as part scavenger hunt and part installation, do you have any expectations that, oh, people will get it, or they'll, you know, they'll really be willing participants?
I hope that they will be willing participants.
Yeah.
And the hope is that it's a fun evening for everyone who comes to the gallery, whether or not they understand all the intentions. Who's to say, you know? But
yeah, I feel like there's going to be a lot of like dialogue happening between like. There's going to be a lot of interaction happening with the viewers. Like, oh, I think it's this object, but, like, maybe it's this. And then there's that, like, question of, like, well, which one do I value more? Like, which one do I think it is? So I feel like there's going to be some dialogue happening between the viewers within the space a lot. I feel like it's going to be more of, like, a conversation, possibly.
Yeah, it really lends itself to that. I mean, you have to have that sort of a dialogue. Is there, you know, as part of this, scavenger hunt, is there right and wrong? Are there certain choices that are better than others? Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think we're leaving that up to the viewer.
Yeah,
I think that the like viewer's participation really comes to play here.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Charity, when you're not in Kansas City, what are you doing back in New England? Are you making ceramics? You're teaching?
Oh, I'm actually in Philadelphia. I moved from Philadelphia from New England. But in Philly, I am. I work as an executive assistant at the Clay Studio, as well as I teach classes, and I'm an artist member of a gallery there called Practice. Mm-hmm.
Is it unlike Front Space?
Actually, Practice is a lot like Front Space. Our gallery supports performative and experimental artists. Mm-hmm. So we always have different participatory shows.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like there could be a collaboration between Front Space and Practice.
So. Maybe. That's really why we invited you.
And Julia, when you're back home, what does your life revolve around? You exhibit work and
work. I'm an adjunct professor at the University of the Arts. I teach a couple of classes there every semester, and I'm also a nanny for a 3-year-old.
Right, right. You know, it's really interesting how you two came together. Had you known each other prior to this, or were you sort of just pulling together a proposal, or How did that come about?
Well, and Charity met in grad school. We were both grad students at Tyler School of Art in the ceramics department there. And some of our friends suggested that we contact Kendall and Madeline in Front Space about having a show here. Once we found out that Enseco was coming, we were like, we want to get in the mix. So we kind of reached out and kind of found them that way.
You know, last week I was talking to Michael Baxley and from the Belger Art Yards, and we had a discussion about about Enseca and that in the green room. We were talking about when people think about ceramics, they think about cups and saucers and vases, but it's not really that altogether.
Right. It's usually the first thing that people think about, but I think Julia and I's practice is very different.
Yeah.
and I think that's why we seek out alternative gallery spaces, like Front Space.
I feel like we also do have some of the like practice of what like studio potters, like what people initially think of as like this like production. And we both work in that way of like making multiples, which is what this show is. And so I think we do draw a little bit from the history of the ceramic practice, what people normally think of, but we're doing it and making objects that people maybe wouldn't associate firsthand.
With ceramics.
Yeah, with ceramics.
Now, Kendall, can you tell us what's coming up for Front Space down the road? I mean, this is a new year, and I know you've got lots going on that, you know, for 2016. Can you give us some snippets of coming attractions?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, just yesterday, our open call for submissions just closed, and so we've been seeing a lot of really exciting proposals. And, you know, I think that this is a really interesting show to start our season off with because we have been trying to focus on a number of things, but one of these sort of like thematic interests has been craft histories. And so in looking at this show, I think it's really interesting to talk about how a craft changes in context and how something can evolve from being very utilitarian to very open-ended and very much about a different type of social interaction in the 21st century. And so this leads us into a whole season of programming. Next month, we're actually going to have Tim Amundsen from the Turkey Creek Institute for Phenomenal Awareness leading an entire series of programming throughout the gallery, using it as a portal, like I mentioned, and taking people down to the creek. And then after that, it's kind of hard to say, you know, because things are a little up in the air, and we try to be flexible with working with people who have you know, shorter schedules or something. So it remains to be seen.
Yeah. Well, and you know, when you and I and Madeline met, you gave me a little bit of history about Front Space in that it's funded by
the Rauschenberg Foundation.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say Warhol, but...
Well, we have received funding through Charlotte Street via the Andy Warhol Foundation in the past, and are currently still in the term of a Rauschenberg Foundation seed grant. And outside of that, we're largely supported by community members. One of the main things that we focus on as an organization is supporting artists. We try to give artists a small stipend whenever they come through because, like, you know, expenses of, like, traveling can really add up. And so, like, yeah, that source of funding is really beneficial in order to help the people that we work with.
Absolutely. Now, if folks want to get in contact with you or need more information, how do they get a hold of Front Space or you?
You could go to our website, which is frontspace.info, and on there is email address, Facebook, Instagram links, etc. That's probably the best way to find us.
Upcoming events?
We have a whole upcoming tab.
Now, when will you have... I know you said you just finished with a submission dates and all that, but when will you be ready for future submissions?
Well, we usually...
Are you done for 2016?
Yeah, so we usually use our open call to program things throughout the year, but we often work with musicians who are doing one-night performances, and those get scheduled on a shorter-term basis. So if anybody's thinking, like, I really want to play a show in a tiny room with a giant window, you should give us a call.
That's intriguing. I like that. You know, I'm talking to Kendall Harbin, Charity Thaxton, and Julia Six. A Tisket a Tasket opens this Friday, first Friday, March 4th from 6 to 9 at Front Space at 217 West 18th Street. And CharityThaxton.com is your website. I'm looking at the wrong person. And Julia6.com for more information.
Yeah,
or to look at your work. I want to thank you both, or thank you all three of you for coming in and talking with me on ArtSpeak Radio. And congratulations and good luck on your show on Friday.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Maria.
Very good. You know, I want to mention that our good friend Beth Wallerstein Huff down at Kauffman Center wanted to make sure that you are aware of the third annual Future Stages Festival at the Kauffman Center, June 26th. And applications for performance groups are available now through April 4th at kauffmancenter.org. And that way you can take a look at all the information that's available. This is an extension of the Kauffman Center's Open Doors Spotlight on Youth program. So for more information, kauffmancenter.org. And thank you to everyone who called in this afternoon for tickets to the VIP Arts and Jazz event. I also want to thank Danny Powell for coming in, Teresa Lagarde, Keon Jackson, Charity Thaxton, and Julia Six, and Kendall Harbin. Thank you so much for coming in today. Next week on the show, I've got My Arts. Next week is March 9th. I will have the My Arts team in studio with me, and I also will have Deanna Munoz, excuse me, in studio live with me on ArtSpeak Radio. You know, I want to tell people to like us on Facebook. You can download our podcast at www.kkfi.org or on iTunes, so make sure that you do that if you've missed any of the programs in the past. Thank you all for tuning in today. I'm going to sign off early. I do want to mention at 1 o'clock, Jazz in the Afternoon with Jeff Harshberger. At 3 o'clock, Ruby Grant comes in. 6 o'clock, All Souls Forum. Then at 7 o'clock, American Roots. And 9 o'clock, Classical Challenge. So thank you all for tuning in and making us a priority. Honey, I'm coming home.